So I met with another physician named Dr. Patrick Holly, who I knew for some time was an authentically Catholic doc, and he did something unusual over there in the natural family planning world. But I met with Dr. Patrick Holly one night, and he handed me a large print copy of Humana Vitae. And I thought, oh, you know, another piece of bedside reading, right? More research to do, more reading to do. And he says, you need to read this. And I was about to put it in my briefcase, and he said, you need to read it now.
Oh, my goodness. I love these men. This priest and this doctor are great.
Absolutely. So we're Catholic, so of course we met in a bar. And
Humana Vitae in a bar. Well, I guess it's kind of like theology on tap.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
That's right. And so over some excellent beverages, we started reading Humana Vitae line by line. Now, I know you know this, but if any of our listeners haven't read Humana Vitae, there is no excuse for you not reading it. It's short and it's beautiful and it's convicting. So as we came to the end of Humana Vitae, like everyone I know that's ever touched that work, I was convicted. I was cooked. I was done. I knew that I was going to make a change, and this great physician was going to give me the tools to go and make that change.
I want to ask you a little bit about, you know, just the general tenor of the medical community and their regard for this whole concept of natural family planning. I mean, how is it that they that the medical culture looks or views individuals that have taken the step that you've ultimately taken and the step that Dr. Holly had taken?
Well, you know, there's a fair amount of literal and figurative eye rolling that goes on by both obstetrician gynecologists and just other physicians in general, that it's a little bit on the fringe, that that's not supported by research, that how can you not help women not to be pregnant with contraceptives? And then another whole category would be, you know, well, what do you do about these problems that are traditionally treated, so to speak, with a pill? For instance, horribly painful periods, or as we say, dysmenorrhea. The most common treatment, in quotations for that, is birth control pills. So early on, a lot of my colleagues would come up to me and say, that's really great that you want to be faithful, but what are you going to do for all these young women who have painful periods? Just let them suffer? Of course, that wasn't the answer, but that really was the mindset of, you know, it may be one thing to try to do this, but, you know, after all, the church is old-fashioned, and how could it possibly keep up with modern medicine? So there's a lot of that kind of feeling and sentiment that goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm not mistaken, you know, it seems to me that the birth control has become the great panacea for all women's ills. You know, I mean, no matter what the problem is, give her the pill and she's going to be just fine, which to me, I think, encumbers good diagnostics.
Oh, my goodness. Nowhere else in contemporary medicine is this done except in women's health. So we, for generations in contemporary medicine, we've used symptoms to point to a disease state. We treat the disease state and then observe the symptoms resolving as an indication that we've successfully treated the disease. Everywhere except in women's health. A woman comes and says, I have horribly painful periods. Obstetricians, gynecologists don't ask, my goodness, what could be causing that symptom? We just treat that symptom as though it were the disease with birth control pills. I like to use a cardiology analogy. If you went to your cardiologist and said, you know, doc, every time I get on the treadmill, I get chest pain. And the cardiologist said, it's not a problem. Take two Vicodin before you get on the treadmill, and you won't have chest pain. Most of us would look
at that. You won't be staying on the treadmill either, I'm just saying.
You shoot off the back. Yes, exactly. Most of us would look to that cardiologist and say, but doc, what about my heart? You've just treated my symptom. Mm-hmm. And that would be correct. We confuse symptom and disease in women's health. The symptom is the painful periods. What about the underlying disease, like endometriosis or other mm-hmm. problems?
You know, it's interesting that you say that because so many women regard the birth control pill as being something that is liberating. And yet, if you think about it, you know, it's really rather misogynist, isn't it? I mean, women's health is the only branch that does this. And so she is deprived of a good diagnostic of what her condition really is because of this bias toward toward the pill.
Oh, it's remarkable. I'm often called anti-woman because of my very public position on contraception. And I always invite that because it gives me a chance to speak back to that in just the way that you've mentioned. I mean, how is it that me trying to get to the basis of a problem and cure that problem, how could that ever be construed as anti-woman as opposed to just putting a Band-Aid on something and sending them on their way? That's very anti-woman in my view.
Yeah, I'd like you to speak a little bit to a statement that you made earlier that, you know, the figurative and actual eye rolling that goes on where doctors will believe that NAPRO technology, which is the technology using the Creighton model, that this whole technology is really non-science. And that couldn't be further from the truth.
Absolutely. That's as incorrect as any position could be. NAPRO technology and the Creighton model, thanks to some amazing people like the founder, Dr. Thomas Hilgers, at the Creighton Institute or the Pope Paul VI Institute in Omaha, Nebraska, have spent three decades studying these problems with reams of data and researched, published articles pointing out all of these problems, whether it's endometriosis or polycystic ovarian syndrome or male fertility issues, most all of which can be addressed and allow a couple to be open to pregnancy if that's their goal.
Mm-hmm. So many myths abound with regard to this topic. I want to get back to some of the practical matters. So here you were and sitting in a bar and you've read Humanae Vitae and you've been convicted. And what did you do after that?
Well, of course, you should be talking to my wife, probably not me, because without her, I certainly wouldn't be sitting here. But I said to her, I think I've got to make a change. I think I've got to become one of those wacky Catholic OBGYNs that don't act like OBGYNs. And she didn't bat an eye. She said, well, we'll probably go broke, but we'll go there together. Let's save up some extra mortgage payments, and we'll go there together. And so I contacted the Creighton Institute or the Pope Paul VI Institute and said, how do I start this training? And it's a pretty long process. It involves about a year and a half or 2 years and a final exam and a lot of project work along the way, which just said to me as a physician candidate, this is important and it's relevant and it's real. Mm-hmm. So I began that journey. And, I like to remember back the very first day of the very first meeting started with Mass. And now I'd spent 20 years in medicine going to medical meetings. I'd never been to one that started with Mass. And so from the very beginning of the first day of the Creighton training, I realized this is something different. This is not going to be the same.
Well, I have goosebumps on that one. I mean, everything good flows from the sacrifice of our Lord Jesus Christ, and celebrating that at the beginning certainly lets you know how deeply entrenched this is into Amen. The life of faith, right?
And, you know, the Creighton approach is really beautiful and simplistic and complex at the same time. I mean, it comes from an understanding that you, as a woman, are designed to be pregnant. You can choose to be an amazing broadcaster, but your Creator designed you to be pregnant. If you are engaging in the marital embrace and you're not pregnant, that means by definition there is something wrong. My job as a Creighton specialist is to find those things, usually more than one, that are preventing a couple from achieving pregnancy, making them right, then making that couple whole. Then they get to figure out, are they called to biologic parenthood or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to talk about some of those factors that could inhibit the conception of a child and look at the model that is established through NAPRO technology, the help that can bring in light of the technological means that so many are using today. But I think that once you graduated from the Creighton School, you discovered quite to your surprise that rather than the practice just, you know, breaking up and falling apart, you don't have enough time in the day.
You know, every little step of faith was met by affirmation from our Lord saying, thank you, I'm pleased with you, you're doing the right thing. Because every little step led to another step, and each step was bigger and bigger. But you're exactly right. When I got back, I sent out 2,000-plus letters to my patients that said, I'll no longer be doing these things, I'm doing this instead. And I thought, that's the end of the practice. We'll just sit and watch it implode. Instead, we got to sit back and watch it explode. I started seeing four or five patients for every patient that left me because I wasn't doing contraception anymore. Four or five took their place and said, could you help me with this problem? Could you help me with this problem? It was remarkable.
God cannot be outdone in generosity. We give him the smallest of yeses, and he takes that, and he yields just abundant fruit from it, and that's exactly what your practice is showing. And I'd love for our listeners, too, to have a sense of how your practice is oriented. I enjoyed reading about that, and I have questions for you. You know, you've got just a beautiful reality going on there in your practice.
We really do. I mean, we're so, so fortunate. When I started this new practice, my wife and I, who was a certified nurse midwife, thought we would be tiny and that we would never find another physician that could be crazy enough to practice like us. Only a few months went by before another physician contacted me, my first partner, Dr. Angela Martin, who said, I want to be in that thing that you're in. We couldn't believe that. Then we hired another nurse midwife, and then another nurse midwife. And then a few months ago, another physician, Dr. Blaise Milburn, contacted me out of the blue and said, I want to join you. Would you have me? And then within months, another physician, Dr. Jill Stalling, contacted me and said, could I join that thing that you have? So we really have this beautiful, holy alliance, you might say, of like-minded providers who want to provide real, authentic care to women.
It's beautiful. I have to ask you this question. You know, once you made this decision and you moved in the direction to which God was calling you, how did your interior life change?
It's interesting. It changed a great deal, and I don't think I recognized it until the change was over. And the change isn't over. It's still happening. I see things in my children. I have five children. I certainly see things in my three oldest children that tell me that they recognize what we've done. And I can see them taking little steps into their own personal discomfort zones, steps out in their faith to be better witnesses to their peers. And I think it has a great deal to do from my wife and I stepping out that first time. They've seen what happens. And they get to see me do this. I travel a great deal, and I'll talk to a group of five or a group of 500 if they'll listen to me about this journey and about actually authentic pro-women's care. And I think my kids get to see that, and they see that, wow, my mom and my dad are actually doing the things people talk about. Maybe we should do some of those things as well. It's just been a remarkable transformation.
Oh, I can well imagine. And of course, there's so many lessons and insights that you could share with all of us just on how it is that we allow ourselves to surrender to the will of God, to the remarkable truth of the way in which He receives that and does tremendous things in our hearts and in our lives and brings us into that peace that surpasses understanding, that holds us firm in the midst of, you know, just the ups and the downs that go on with life in a broken and fallen world. Well, when we come back, we're going to be talking more friends with our guest today, Dr. Christopher Strout, inviting you to stay with us right here on Women of Grace Live. I am Johnette Williams. It's a special day today, not taking any phone calls, not even social media, which is pretty rare for us too, but we really want to get everything out of our guests that we possibly can. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, friends. You're listening to Women of Grace Live. I am Johnette Williams. Today we have a special guest with us. Dr. Christopher Strout is with us. He is an obstetrician gynecologist located in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Ladies, if you live up that way and you want a really good OBGYN, I suggest that you check out his practice. You will not be disappointed. What a great opportunity it is to talk about such matters using the airwaves for that great good today. As I mentioned, we're not taking phone calls. We're not doing social media. We're just spending our time with Dr. Stroud today, but I do want to remind you to get out there to our website, womenofgrace.com. We have all kinds of good resources available for you there. All of our radio programs are archived there for you underneath our Women of Grace exclusive opportunity, as are all of the programs that we do for EWTN Television under the name of Women of Grace. So we invite you to get out there and check it out. Indeed, this is an area that we have supported for many, many years. Oh my goodness, going back to the Abundant Life, I think some of the very first programs that we did were on natural family planning back in 1993. And we've carried that the sense, you know, the sacredness of the female person, all of her reproductive organs are to the inside of her body. Mm. It's veiled, it's hidden, because yes, wonders take place.
It is spectacular and beautiful. And I've been doing this 25 years now, and it never gets old. It's a beautiful story every single time. It troubles me. How could sperm and egg meeting, creating a new human, ever be a mistake? How could it ever be a failure? A contraceptive failure results in a human person. Those two positions are inconsistent, aren't they?
Anything
that leads to a person can never be construed as a failure.
Right. And as I was saying earlier on, you know, all of social justice, all of social teaching in the Catholic Church is based on the notion of human flourishing. And we have a duty and a responsibility as Catholics to make certain that we are doing what we can so that life can flourish, and life begins at that moment. So our call, our holy duty before God, the most chivalrous act that we can do, is this business of protecting life from natural conception to natural death. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the maladies that women experience so that we can bust open the fact that indeed there are ways to cure these illnesses of women without simply treating symptoms that cause so much damage to their bodies.
Certainly. I mean, you know, two of the biggest conditions that I spend my energy on are polycystic ovarian syndrome, or so-called PCOS, and endometriosis. And I see young women from 11, 12, 13 that have PCOS, that have terribly irregular, heavy periods, often very painful. A young woman just beginning menses really struggles to deal with irregular and haphazard menses, you know, from a social standpoint at school. And so often I meet her mother and she in the office for what the moms will call a safe referral, because the mom is terrified to bring her young daughter to an obstetrician's office because she knows they're going to try to put them on the pill. Mm-hmm. But our office is a safe one. And so then we can talk about this condition. We can make the diagnosis by checking hormone levels. We can evaluate her ovaries with ultrasound and actually make the diagnosis, and then set about the task of treating that disease process to protect her from diabetes later in life, from obesity, from all of the things that go along with PCOS. Just like that with endometriosis, with painful periods. Recently, I operated on a young girl who was 11 and found stage 3 endometriosis. Now, typically, she would have been placed on the pill. Her pain would have gone away. She might have been on the pill a decade or more. Then when she gets married, she stops the pill to be pregnant, and it doesn't happen. Then she meets me or someone like me, only to find out you have endometriosis and your tubes are permanently ruined. But I could have helped you at 11, but I didn't get a chance. That's part of the lie that is covering up diseases by treating their symptoms with oral contraception. Mm-hmm. You know, if those two problems, PCOS and endometriosis, went away, I'd have a lot more free time, because they're plaguing women every day across the continuums of their lives, from adolescence to post-adolescence. And there are far too many people that are trying to help them.
Yeah, and I want to talk about, you know, this business of putting young girls on the birth control pill. I mean, their little bodies are just beginning to develop. And what is the long-term effect of this? You mentioned one from the disease itself, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And sadly, the question really is an ask from a safety standpoint. So to turn off a young girl's reproductive axis, as we call it, the signals from the brain to the ovaries, to turn that off, what's the implication for turning that off in an immature, yet not yet fully formed young woman? We don't know the long-term implications. It's never been studied. Those questions aren't asked, sadly. But we know indirectly, covering up diseases like endometriosis and polycystic ovarian syndrome. If nothing else, it allows the diseases to march on in the background and sometimes have devastating, irrevocable effects on the young women and their reproductive health.
You know, I have to say, it takes me right back to the pharmaceutical companies. I just can't imagine what's the word that I want to use? Just the lack of integrity and ethical practice to know that this is the case and how it is that they have managed to convert the minds of so many young men and women.
It is remarkable.
Yeah. Are in medical schools continues to baffle
you
me.
You know, I hope our listeners are moved to act. And there's a couple of websites I would point out that might
Please
be helpful.
Do.
CreightonModel.com is a great one. That's CreightonModel. CreightonModel.com is a great site to start exploring. And there's another beautiful site called One More Soul, OneMoreSoul.com. And in the upper right-hand corner of that site, there's a search window to find an NFP, or Natural Family Planning-only provider. And those are two great sites for women and their mothers and their spouses to start looking and asking questions to try to find someone that's authentic in their women's health and authentic in following church teaching in women's health.
Well, and I also want to recommend your website as well and your Facebook page. So why don't you give us the info for that?
Well, my website is complicated. It's fertilityandmidwifery.com, and that's MIDWIFERY, fertilityandmidwifery.com. Or if you just Google my name, a lot of things pop up, maybe some not as flattering as others. but you can find me by just searching my name or going to our website. Most of us in the Creighton Model Napper Technology world, because there's so few of us, we do telemedicine visits, we do phone-based consults. We're trying to help as many people as we can. So whether you find your way to me or someone like me, please try to find your way. We'll be glad to help.
And what about for doctors who might be listening today or those that are involved in this very special branch of women's health? How can they get more information?
You know, contact me. Find me on my website. I'll gladly talk to them. Go to these websites. You'll see how many physicians are actually practicing in a way that's ethical, that's effective, and that's Catholic.
Yes, and all of their practices are burgeoning. Well, it's been wonderful having you with us today, Dr. Stroud. I'm so, so pleased for the opportunity to present this information to all of you, our listeners. I'm going to invite you back another time, Dr. Stroud. I hope you'll say yes.
Absolutely. God bless you and your work. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and God bless you. And friends, we certainly do want to send you to our website, womenofgrace.com. All kinds of good information for you there. If you want to share this program with others, recommend the EWTN app. Bye-bye now.